Hello. Let's join Fred Kuhn in another problem-solving interview.
Welcome, everybody. Glad to have you on the show today. We have a very interesting guest with some great thoughts and sharing some solutions with you, Kim Buckey. Kim is the Vice President of Client Services and the Key Advisor and Senior Subject Matter Expert on new and evolving compliance issues that affect employers in today's marketplace. Welcome, Kim.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, nice to have you here. It's really an interesting subject, and I'm sure that all of our HR compadres out there in the country are going to find this very interesting. So let's just get right into it. Kim, what are the main issues, as you see it, that today's HR departments face when communicating benefits to employees?
So I think there are basically three. Of course, there are many more, but three major issues. First, and a lot has been said about this, of course, is the fact that we have more generations in the workforce than we've ever had before. And, you know, from a communications perspective, that means that HR needs to tailor messages to the priorities and need of a wide range of audiences and make use of more channels to make sure that those messages are being heard. So huge issue trying to keep track of those, you know, priorities and needs and preferences. Second is, and this may actually be the first, is the lack of health and health insurance literacy among the American public.
Amen.
Only about 12% of Americans are considered proficient in health literacy, and 35% are rated at basic or below basic in their understanding. And that level really hasn't changed much in the past 10 or 15 years.
Kim, what is health literacy?
Good question. So health literacy is really defined as the ability to process information about health and act on it appropriately. So it, for an example, would be being able to read the instructions on a prescription bottle and to follow them correctly, or to advocate for yourself when you're meeting with your doctor. Now, health insurance literacy, by contrast, is the ability to, you know, understand health insurance. So another somewhat scary statistic is only 7% of consumers can correctly define premium, deductible, coinsurance, and out-of-pocket max. And, you know, those are pretty important concepts as you're trying to navigate using your health plan. We've had countless instances where we've had employees of our clients confusing premiums and deductibles, thinking that, the deductible is what's taken out of my paycheck. Well, no. So, you know, if you're faced with that lack of understanding, it's, you know, not overly surprising that employees just generally don't want to pay attention to employee benefits.
Can I ask a root cause question? Why do you think that low level of literacy, both for the health literate and the insurance literacy, why do you think they are so low?
Well, I think part of it is just the level of change that has happened over the past few decades. Obviously, cost control has been a huge issue pretty much since benefits, you know, first made their appearance in the workplace. And in an effort to control costs, employers and insurers and brokers have, you know, been working to develop new products that will help provide the coverages that employees and employers are looking for, but controlling costs at the same time. So we have seen, you know, the healthcare world change from just plain old indemnity plans back in the dark ages. And then we saw HMOs, and then we saw managed care plans, and then we saw high deductible plans, and then we saw private exchanges. So there's all of these different products out there, and there's never really been a lot of attention devoted toward explaining how those plans work.
Seems like consumer whack-a-mole. You try to put your hand on something and get a grasp, and something else pops up over.
Exactly. And, you know, particularly with, you know, when high deductible plans came out, you know, there was all this talk about, oh, it's the advent of the consumer, and now that, you know, employees have quote unquote skin on the game, they'll start to shop around for coverage. The problem is, A, employees really don't understand how these plans work. B, we never told them, A, hey, you know, you can shop for healthcare. And C, we never showed them how they can go about doing that. So no wonder they're confused. And, you know, we have like one in five, I think, Americans have either postponed or completely delayed or skipped getting the care they need just because they're so frightened about the cost.
Is it an employer or a governmental role to educate the population? I mean, I think about the early Rand Corporation study that said there are five legs to the stool of the American pillar: defense, education, health care, and so forth. Why wouldn't the government become more involved in educating its population? Is that because the government is as confused as everybody else?
I will reserve judgment on that. They have certainly made an effort. So when the regulations regarding summaries and benefits and coverage, for example, came out as part of the ACA, an important part of that was a uniform glossary, right, which was the government's attempt to, you know, explain those basic concepts. And I was actually fortunate to be part of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners several years ago, convened several working groups to kind of review the SBC and the uniform glossary and make some recommendations. And we had a lot of very robust conversation about, you know, how we could make those forms more user-friendly, make the terminology more understandable. But we also have to consider that I believe it's somewhere between 60 and 70% of Americans get their benefits coverage through employers. So I think the onus is really on the employers to step up.
Okay, so that means you have to educate the HR teams. And so let's segue into another area of issue here, and that is if the onus is on 60% of Americans getting their coverage through employers, the onus is on the employer. So how do HR teams effectively communicate benefits information to their employees? And still trying to wrestle with this cost control as part of that message without adding additional HR resources. And why would you add additional HR resources? So help me understand what that is too. I'm just thinking, free thinking here.
Yeah, so that's always a challenge. And, you know, particularly despite the level of change that we've seen in benefits and HR in general over the past several decades, it seems like HR is always being asked to do more with less. I think one of the most important things that HR can do is put together a written communication strategy. Mapping out your messages, your audiences, your media channels, a calendar, and some metrics on how you're going to measure your success is like so critical to ensuring that your team, whether your team is one person or 10 people or 5 people, whether it's entirely in-house or you're able to leverage some outside resources, you need to make sure that everybody is, you know, singing from the same page of the hymnal, to use that overused analogy. You know, having it all in writing and documented is just so helpful to have a game plan in place. And it enables you to go back and look at what's working, what's not working, where you might need to tweak things.
That might be well and good for the Fortune 1000 companies. What about the small businesses in America who don't have these resources?
Yeah, I think the strategy is just as important for them. Again, you know, being able to map out and see what your game plan is, whether you're an HR department of one or an HR department of, you know, 15 or 20, it's just as applicable. And it's really important, again, particularly if you're trying to communicate to multiple generations or just a diverse workforce in general, you know, having an understanding of your workforce demographics will help you tailor your messages and what channels you use. So you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck if you have it all written down and you can see what you're trying to accomplish.
So assuming HR can do their job and without adding additional company cost and working 18 hours a day, what kinds of things do HR teams and HR folks do? Because you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. You can provide all this great material. If they don't read it and they don't understand it, what good is it?
Sure. So one great tool is to use incentives or rewards. We've seen that a lot in wellness programs, you know, to encourage participation in those. Doesn't necessarily need to be associated with a wellness program, and it doesn't need to be as drastic as burying a $10,000 prize in the fine print was one organization did recently, got a lot of press coverage for doing that. But, you know, it can be as simple as, so for example, we have clients who offer advocacy and transparency programs. And what that basically means is, for example, I need to have an MRI done, right? Now, if I, in a normal world, I would just go wherever my doctor told me to go, right? I have no idea what that's going to cost, either my employer or me. I may not really care what it costs my employer, but, you know, I might be really interested in what my share of that cost is going to be. So it's in my best interest to find a quality provider who can do that for the lowest cost possible. So there might be a service where you call up and say, I need an MRI. This is the type of MRI I need. This is the general geographic area I'd prefer to stay at. And the consulting organization would know what my plan is, what my deductible is, what my network is. They'd be able to look and see, you know, how far along I am in meeting my deductible, right? And then they can provide me with a report that says, well, you can go to facility A, facility B, facility C. Here's the range of costs. Make your choice. Now, a lot of employers who are using that service are providing a reward. So they might say, give 10% of the cost difference, maybe capped at, you know, $500 or $1,000, if you choose one of the two less expensive of the three choices, right? So not only are you, the employee, benefiting from a lower cost, so if you're paying 20% of the procedure, you want to pay 20% of $1,000, not 20% of $10,000, and you're getting this cash reward on top of it. So that can be a tremendously effective incentive. Also, to the extent that you can use actual testimonials, employees who are willing to share their experience with a program like that, or any type of program, really. It could be, you know, a program where you're providing one-on-one support during enrollment. You might get an employee who's willing to say, yeah, I talked to somebody and they just made it so much easier for me to make a decision. You know, people relate to stories. That's something that they can identify with personally. So to the extent you can leverage those, it's tremendously effective.
Folks, we have spent a wonderful 15 minutes here with a very informed guest, Kim Buckey. Kim, I would love to explore more detail and real stories, as you said. So maybe we'll do another podcast in the future and just talk about situational things that people can listen to and relate to their own lives. Please read Kim Buckey's biography on the guest biography section of the website. Kim, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for visiting with us. We welcome your comments and suggestions and look forward to having you join us soon at Workplace Strategies.